Welcome. It is Thursday, January 31st, 2013. I'm Representative Costello, and this is the House Finance Committee Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It is 4 o'clock today. We will be hearing about the 2005 look back, followed by the department's 10-year plan, and then we will hear from Kristen Curtis for the legislative audit review. And then we will, if time permits, we will be looking at the legislative intent review. And these items are found in the binder for the committee. So as members show up, I'll probably be reminding them of where to locate this information. With that, I'd like to invite Lacey Sanders. Lacey is the legislative fiscal analyst for the department. And we've been joined by Representative Drummond.
Representative Costello, do you want me to try and get it on the screen, or do you want me to just walk through them in the binder?
If you can get it on the screen, that would be great.
I can't see the back of the
card. Representative Drummond, we're on the 2005 look back tab, and as we go through, I'll just remind you of where to find this information, but all of them are found in the tab.
There we go.
Sounds
okay.
Great.
Okay, great. I had another subcommittee.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry for being late. They're not finished yet either. So.
There we go.
Sorry.
Minor technical difficulty.
There yet anyway.
I'll go ahead and take an Addies while we get the presentation up. Back to order. Thank you, Lacey.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I work for Legislative Finance Division, and I am going to walk you guys through our 2005 look back charts. These charts were developed last year to give those on the subcommittees a picture of the department's budget over the last years. I'm going to start on page number one, and as I walk through these, I will explain whether it's all funds or general funds and try and give you an idea of what we're trying to show in these graphs. And also, if you have questions as I'm going through, please feel free to stop me. The first chart shows you from 2005 to 2014 the growth in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This is looking at the general funds only. The red bars reflect the total budget, general fund budget, each year. The department's general fund budget grew by $79.1 million, an average annual growth rate of approximately 9.8%. The blue line on the chart reflects the department's percentage of general funds out of all agencies' general fund budget. So if you take all agencies across the across the state, their agency budgets and Department of Commerce would be approximately now 2.72% of that total.
Lacey, could you describe the bar that sticks out? Is that the addition of the Division of Economic Development, or
there are two? Are you referring to 2009 or 2013?
2013 management plan.
Representative Costello, that has to do with a one-time item that we reflect in Legislative Finance's reports. It's a $25 million one-time community revenue sharing.
Thank you.
Okay. There are no more questions. I'm going to move on to page number two. Page number two reflects the department's line items. Over the years, the majority of the funding for the FY14 governor's request is in the services line, the grants line, and the personal services line. Personal services is the employees that it has, the services is any contracts that it has, and then grants is the money that it grants out to communities through there's national forest receipts, payment in lieu of taxes, the power cost equalization, and as I mentioned, that $25 million for the community revenue sharing.
Thank you, and we've been joined by Representative Millett.
I came from the same meeting you're at.
You can join us if not.
Okay, I'm going to move on to page number 3. And what we're doing is we're just drilling down lower and lower into the budget and giving you each piece. This is the personal services for the Department of Commerce. And the green line reflects what is budgeted in their personal services. The blue line, the blue portion at the top reflects the contractual salary adjustments. So from FY 2005 to FY 14, the contractual salary adjustments totaled just over $14 million. The non-contractual personal services increases totaled approximately $10.4 million. That is going to be for the addition of any new positions, any movement between line items. Departments occasionally move money from their services line to other lines, or to personal services, for example, to cover the cost of new positions. Moving on to page number 4, this is the total number of positions for each year. The department has grown by 57 full-time positions, a reduction of 2 permanent part-time positions, and an increase of 10 temporary positions.
Lacey, could you mention what the two positions are, the two permanent full-time positions that were added in since last year?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, if I remember correctly, the department has had various increases and decreases, and I'm going to turn and look at Joellen.
and we've been joined by Representative Josephson, Representative Sadler, and Representative Peggy Wilson, and for those who are joining us, we're on page 4, found in the tab of the 2005 look back.
Just one moment, Representative Costello, let me see. I can get back to you a kind of a summary, if you'd like, on the position increases. They had increases and decreases throughout the department, so I would need to get back to you the exact changes.
Thank you.
Is a net. So. Okay. Moving on to page number 5. This is kind of a scary looking chart when you first look at it, but what it is it's the appropriations within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. This is the general funds only, and what I tried to do with this chart is highlight the major changes. So the blue line across the top is the Alaska Energy Authority. And the large piece in this is the power cost equalization program, so AEA's PCE program. And in 2009, there was a large increase. The legislature passed HB 4001, which increased the ceiling. At the same time, the legislature increased the appropriation to fully fund that amount, so you see a large spike. And one thing to note, in the Department of Commerce, we have kind of an anomaly. They have a lot of one-time items. So they're put in for 1 year to pay for something, and then they're taken out the next year. That is the case with the green line, which represents the community and regional affairs appropriation. I mentioned earlier there was a one-time increase of $25 million, a one-time payout for community revenue sharing in 13. In 12, they also had a $20 million one-time increase for the same thing. And in FY11, they had a $5 million named recipient grant to the Alaska tourism industry and an $800,000 grant to the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. Mm-hmm. And as we go along further, I'm going to show you another chart that I think gives a better picture of community and regional affairs. So we'll talk about that in another moment. Another thing I want to point out is the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. The last few years, the legislature has instituted a new methodology for funding ASME, in addition to providing general fund match, to the receipts that they collect, it also allows AFSCME to carry forward any receipts that they collect. And in order to carry forward that receipt authority, we have to add the authority to their budget, and then through intent language, we limit the amount of funding that they are allowed to spend.
We've been joined by Representative Ledoux. And Representative, we're under the 2005 look back, page 5.
Thank you.
So you see a large increase in the orange line, which represents AFSCME's general fund budget from 2005 to 2014. But I just trying to note for you different highlights of this chart. There's a lot going on in Department of Commerce's budget. If you guys have additional questions as you look at this later, feel free to follow up with me or our office. I can get you guys information on what is going on. Okay? That's a lot of information. Okay. Moving on to page number 6. This is the same chart for the Department of Commerce. It's all of the appropriations. However, it's all funds. And this time, instead of pointing out all of the same things that I did on the previous general fund chart, I made one note to the change in revenue sharing. This is where the department has the National Forest Receipts appropriation and then the Payment in Lieu of Taxes appropriation. They have received in the past additional funding from the federal government for those programs. So you see an increase in 2010 and 11, 12 and 13, it starts to decline. The National Forest Receipts program was scheduled to sunset, or not to sunset, excuse me, to return to its original formula. And in 13, the legislature reduced $14.6 million of federal receipt authority. However, if the program does get more funding than is in this section, they have the ability through a language section to receive all of the federal receipts that they need to pass on to communities.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I need a little help in understanding this because I thought most of the timber receipts went to the schools, so how does the department give it to the schools through, so how does that work? Because I know a lot of it goes to the schools.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, if I can have Joellen Hanrahan come up here, she may be able to, my understanding is that the funding flows through Community and Regional Affairs to the communities. I just didn't want to make things wrong.
So this, okay, so it actually comes to the department from the feds.
Correct.
And then you guys know which ones are earmarked for what schools?
Correct. The department distributes that funding to the appropriate people.
Okay. And so where does the revenue sharing come in on those receipts?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, the term revenue sharing in this case has to do with the National Forest Receipts Program is a revenue sharing program. If I'm understanding you correctly, there is another revenue sharing program that is statewide, and that is not included in the department's budget. However, as I mentioned earlier, there was a $25 million one-time boost last year, and the prior year before that, there was a $20 million boost, and that was just placed in Community and Regional Affairs budget for distribution to the communities.
Even though it wasn't the same program as what you're talking about?
Correct. If I'm understanding you correctly.
Okay, yeah, and that's where I was confused, because I knew that wasn't the way it normally worked. So, is it going to follow-up, Representative?
Absolutely.
In the past, it wasn't distributed through your department, was it?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson,
talking
are
about
you
the statewide revenue sharing?
The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development does distribute that funding. It is not budgeted within their department. It is a statewide appropriation.
Okay. So you guys just, I have an...
They're past their ages.
You guys want to add?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, yeah. And through the chair, Representative Wilson, I work for the Division of Legislative Finance. I don't work for the department. So we do have department representatives here, and I can have Joelle and Hanrahan if you'd like, or the commissioner come to the table for additional questions with that.
Well, if it's just pass through, that's what I was getting confused about, because you're talking about a different revenue sharing than I was. So that's good enough, I guess.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other questions on this one? I'm going to move on to page number 7.
Lacey, for those members who are new, could you explain the QTA and why it went down in the 2012 management plan for those who are new to the committee?
Of course. Representative Kussel, I'm actually going to turn back to page number 5 because I highlighted it here on the chart. I'm sorry, I did skip over it earlier. In 2012, the tourism marketing campaign was removed from the Qualified Trade Association's contract allocation, and the funding was put into the capital budget. So you see a decrease in the FY12 budget. In FY13, the money was moved, or was not moved, it was placed in the Department of Commerce's budget within the economic development appropriation. So that there you see a large spike in the pink line in the chart, and that has to do with that $16 million for tourism marketing.
I'm sorry, can you show me on the which one of these lines you're talking about?
Yes. So there is a solid gray line with some dots on it.
The solid gray one?
It's hard. I'm having a hard time seeing it
too. Okay, I thought you said QTA.
Qualified Trade Association. Yeah. So that's
brown in mine. No. Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, yeah, there's
two of those too. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I got you now.
She did refer to it as a scary chart a little while before you got
here. There's a lot going on.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, moving on. It's just chart number 7 is just an example of the kind of detail that we can provide if subcommittee members are interested in a specific area within the budget, within the operating budget. This is just an example of the Alaska Energy Authority's appropriation and the lower level details within the AEA. I've highlighted the large increase that they had in 2009 when the floor was increased and the legislature added additional funding for that. And then I've also highlighted the brown line represents the power cost equalization allocation and where the funding is for that. And in 2014, the governor's request includes $40.4 million to fully fund PCE or the PCE program. So this is just an example if others have questions. So page number... Excuse me. Page number 8 is the Community and Regional Affairs appropriation. This is a single allocation within an appropriation, so there's only going to be one line. But what I was trying to reflect here was the one-time items that Community and Regional Affairs has. Their base budget is the black dotted line. And when I say base budget, that's their annual operating ongoing costs. The blue line reflects the one-time items that have been added in the last few years. So you see a large increase in their budget, but really the budget for Community and Regional Affairs is quite smaller.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to page number 9. This chart reflects all of the funding within the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and it breaks it down by fund group. And each year you can see by fund source, whether it be unrestricted general funds, designated general funds, other state funds, or federal receipts, what proportion it is by fund group. There is a large increase in 13 as well as 12, and that has to do with the addition of the $16 million for tourism marketing, $20 million for community revenue sharing, and then in 13, the $25 million. So you've seen an increase over those years.
Lacey, one of the things that I noticed is that the federal funds decreased by 20%, over time. And we had heard last year in House Finance that we can expect federal funds to the state to decrease by at least 15% a year for the foreseeable future. And have you heard that also, or do you keep track of what trends are with the federal contributions to the state? And of the money that the feds have contributed, is this something that the state then will be asked to backfill, or are these programs that would end because the federal contribution is ending? Or is that a better question for the commissioner?
I think it's a good question for both. Our office is starting to look at, well, not is starting, we are looking at the declining federal receipts for each agency and analyzing actually the change from 5 to 8 years ago when federal funds were starting to be replaced over time. So our office is working on that, and we are looking at each agency to see the change. The department can speak more specifically for their department, but one note I do want to make is that there was a big decrease in the department's federal budget last year, and that had to do with that reduction in national forest receipts, $14.6 million, I believe it was. That's a big reduction in the amount of federal funds that is within Department of Commerce.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lisa, a question, and if I've missed it, please explain again the jump in the undesignated general fund between 08 and 09 and subsequent increases in UGF.
PC, okay. That's what I was thinking.
Easy peasy.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm going to go back to this page right here, page number 7. The Power Cost Equalization Program is funded currently through endowment receipts from the Power Cost Equalization Fund and general funds. Right now it's a split. So in 2009, there was a large increase because the level of reimbursement changed from 0.525 kilowatts to $1 kilowatt. And the legislature put a large increase of general funds into that program. The endowment receipts are designated general funds. I would have to go back and look to see if that specifically was the change for PCE.
Okay, just feedback, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So basically, legislature amped up the limit, expanded how much monthly electricity they could use. And you said, was there a fund change that I missed?
That's what I'm going to have to go back and look, Representative Sadler. I know that they put a lot of general funds into the program, but I would have to go back specifically and look to see if it was designated general funds or if there was a fund change associated with that. I'm fairly certain there was, but I'm going to have to check.
Okay. And they didn't just put more money in the endowment to try and spin off more USFR?
They did.
Put $400,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, that happened later, though, the $400 million. Through the chair, Representative Millett, the $400 million was just recently for the endowment. Yeah, so Representative Sadler, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought your question had to do with the change from 08 to 09.
Yeah.
So I'll just have to follow up with you if that's okay.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. slide number 10 is a similar slide to the one that you just saw. It's just looking at it by percentages instead of by dollars. And lastly, the last two slides are also similar. The first one is general funds only, and this has to do with the department's 10-year plan. The black solid line is the department's budget over the last 9 years. What we've done is we came up with we calculated the annual growth for the next 10 years. So if you continue that annual growth, it's a 9.8% growth rate for the Department of Commerce. The black dotted line along the bottom comes from the department's 10-year plan. The slide number 12, the last slide, is the same slide, but it's all funds. And one thing to note is that the continuation of the annual growth includes things like personal services. I know this has been commented on before. The department's 10-year plan does not include contractual salary adjustments. I believe that's done statewide, and so there is a little bit It's not an apples to apples comparison when you think when you have something like that. But
Representative Millett.
Thank you. Can you tell me? So we have a 10-year management plan that is what you're shooting for. What are those steps that you're taking? I mean, that's a pretty big. A 9.8 is a pretty big growth increase for your department. So what steps are you taking to mitigate that from happening, continuing to happen? Is it
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I'm going to have the department come forward.
Okay.
They'll be the ones that can talk to what they're doing.
Okay. Good afternoon, Dwellin Hanrahan, Director of Admin Services for the Department of Commerce. What you're looking at is a 9.8% growth, which I believe is calculated including the one-time items.
Correct.
So that. As Lacey said, this really isn't an apples-to-apples comparison because we have no idea what one-time items will be, whether the governor or the legislature will decide to put in $25 million more in revenue sharing this year or another hit into PCE or some other big event or an entity that moves into our department. We've had aerospace in our department before. We have tourism in our department now.
Alcohol.
We had ABC board come in. Mm-hmm. There's a bill out there for AGDS to come in. So it's not a completely one-to-one comparison.
Follow up, Representative Millett.
So some of the increases are due to just pass-through money that you budgeted. It's in your budget, makes your budget look like it's growing. The pass-through money for revenue sharing, the pass-through
Correct.
Money for PCE.
Correct.
Okay. So without those one-time increments, what's the growth? Do you have a?
Because
personal services. I'm sorry.
We have not. I would say that the growth rate would be more our line, the black dotted line on the bottom, because we did not put one-time items in that line. So that line represents the department without one-time items
okay.
and without. Without personal service salary adjustments that are done at a statewide level. So we're looking at really just a, you know, kind of a steady growth along, given we're looking at where, where the revenues are, which appear to be tight and short in the coming years, and we're just anticipating kind of moving along and doing our programs, our base programs on a slow growth level.
Thank you.
And Lacey, do you have an idea of how often the one-time items become part of the base for the department over the past, 10 years? I mean, isn't it the case that oftentimes we do end up increasing the base for those items?
Representative Costello, I did kind of an analysis over the last 10 years of one-time items for the Department of Commerce that have been added to the base, and I can provide your office with that.
Okay, if you could provide that to us, we'll distribute that to the committee members. Oh, Representative Ledoux.
So what's the procedure in which a one-time item becomes part of the base? I mean, do you just decide after you've got it one time that you're going to add it to the base, or does it have to be there more than one time? Or
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, one-time items are that's actually a decision of the legislature, whether we go for a one-time item. For example, for many years, the Alaska Legal Services Grant was a one-time item in our budget. The Alaska Marine Safety Education grant that funds all the marine safety in the state was a one-time grant. There were a number of those that were just every year came up through the legislature. And at one point, the legislature said, we fund these every year. We've been funding them for the last 10 years. We want to just put them into your base. And that's generally how it happens. Because if you put something into our budget as a one-time item, we come back the next year and take it out, and we'll put it back in as another one-time item for your consideration of whether you want it to be a one-time item or you want it to be built into our base.
Or we don't want to fund it at all.
Or you don't want to fund it at all. Always your choice.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the members?
No.
Okay. And now we'll be moving on to the department's 10-year plan. And Joellen, welcome for that presentation.
Madam Chair, unless there's any specific questions, I think we've sort of discussed it with this presentation. on this this slide here, unless there are specific questions related to the 10-year plan.
Representative Josephson.
I don't have a mic, and now I do have a mic. Thank you. Your department through the thank you, Madam Chair. Your department includes revenue sharing for municipalities. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
This is. I assume you know this. This is so central to what we hear from our home communities, and we find that they see us spending billions of dollars, $12 billion last year, including federal resources, capital and operating, and they're sort of nickel-diming a million here, a million there, trying to save fire stations. Where are we on revenue sharing? And I apologize if I've missed that. And what is it that the governor is requesting or recommending?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I believe the revenue sharing is in a statewide appropriation, so it's not reflected in our direct budget this year. It's in what's called a statewide appropriation. I believe it's at the $60 million level, which is under the base level based on the formula in statute.
So could you briefly, if I could, Madam Chair?
Absolutely, Representative Josephson.
Could you briefly describe, and you can give me the elementary school version and I won't be offended. Mm-hmm. You said it's the governor's proposal is under the statutory formula. Am I paraphrasing you right?
Representative Josephson, yes, you are paraphrasing me right. There is in statute, it lays out and I don't have the specifics in front of me, but I believe it's based on populations and organized and unorganized borough statistics, but I can get that statute site for you on specifically what that is.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that. Okay. And I just know that allocation or appropriation is so central, and I'm already getting a little bit inured to the dollar figures I see floating around the building, and I see that figure and I say that's so modest, at least that's sort of at first blush. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll be moving on to the audits, the legislative audit review, and for the members, there's a tab that is labeled audits. And we will have Kristen Curtis, who's the director of the Legislative Audit Division, summarizing all of the audits that that have been done related to the department. But Kristen, I was going to ask that we begin on page 3, because I think that the audit of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing may generate more questions from the members, and so I wanted to start with that audit and then move on to the others if time allows. And that can be found on page 3 of the audit book.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis and I am the legislative auditor. Beginning on page 3 of your summaries, we have a audit on specifically on the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, DCBPL. And we were asked to go in and do a special audit on select occupational licensing and enforcement issues. This audit was issued in the fall of 2011, and it summarized deficiencies in the department's administrative and investigative support to the occupational boards. Based on problems noted during the audit over the determination of occupational licensing fees, the accounting for indirect costs, accounting for personal services, and implementation problems with the new case management system, we made 3 recommendations to the department. We recommended that the division director ensure that occupational licensing fees were reviewed annually in accordance with state law. And we recommended that the division director improve the method of allocating indirect costs. The division's method of accounting for costs had resulted in an inappropriate distribution of costs to individual occupations. Department agreed with the recommendation and has since changed its methodology. When we went in and did our 2012 sunset audits, we looked at this new methodology and we found that it was reasonable and appropriate. Finally, we recommended that the division director take immediate action to address the deficiencies in the investigative case management system And when we went in 2012 with our sunsets, we found that this recommendation was not fully addressed, and it shows up again as a recommendation in the sunset audits. And that's a summary of that specific audit. There's questions.
Representative Wilson.
So if they have not addressed it like you asked, and like we legislators usually look at those and pay attention to those, and if they haven't done it, what happens? I mean, how do we address it now? I mean, is it coming up this year for sunset?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, if we have a division type recommendation as part of a specific sunset audit of an occupational board, what we can do and what we do is we look at that type of recommendation when we do the next year's sunset audits. So it may not be specifically on that board, but we will come through, and usually these type of recommendations are applicable to all boards, investigative support or administrative support. So we come in and look at it the next year.
Okay. But now, so they haven't done what they were supposed to do, so how do we deal with that? I mean, what do we do as legislators?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I've seen it taken up when a sunset bill, extension bill, comes up through Labor and Commerce, typically. Department may be asked questions about the audit. We come in the next year's sunsets, and we could possibly have another recommendation. That's typically the venue for following those up at the legislative level.
Representative Wilson?
But sometimes the next sunset isn't up for like 5 years or 10 years, and if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're thinking they're going to get away with it. So, really. when they don't follow up, do you let us know that they haven't followed up then the next year?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, there is no mechanism right now to follow up performance audit recommendations unless it's through the legislative process to extend, a bill is introduced to extend a board, so that bill is discussed in committee. So we right now have no method for following up performance audit recommendations.
Representative Wilson, the department is well aware of the problems that are in this audit, and so we have asked the Division Director of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing, Don Habiger, to appear before the committee, and he is on our agenda so that he can update us on the steps that the department has taken to shore up the practices. And Commissioner, are you interested in commenting, or would you prefer that we wait until the Division Director? Okay. Commissioner Bell? No?
For the record, Susan Bell, Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And as Chair Costello said, there will be a specific specific subcommittee session on it, but I want to, with the questions that are raised, we have been very, very focused on addressing the issues at the division level, with also with the engagement of Division of Admin Services, as well as the LBNA. Representative Hawker has taken a keen interest in audits, as well as the Division of Corporation, Business, and Professional Licensing. So I want to put that question at ease now, and I know there will be a much more detailed discussion on CBPL.
Okay, I do have a comment to make, please.
Representative Wilson.
I do. If you need, like right now you said there's nothing in statute or to have something happen if they haven't followed up. And I don't understand when I say these recommendations are per a specific like it might be the nursing board or the hairdressers board, they're the ones we're talking about that haven't done this, not you guys. Or am I wrong at that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that
Joellen, could you also identify yourself?
Okay. Just Joellen Handrahan, listening. Director of Admin Services for Department of Commerce. And, you know, the first thing I want to say is that we pay really close attention to audits. We find them very valuable, and we never ignore what's in an audit so far. So I think the way that this was phrased may be a little misleading in the fact that their audit has found that we have not completed the process of addressing that, but we have certainly taken multiple steps, including the fact that the legislature gave us some funding to make corrections to the investigation system. And that system does, as a base, go across all boards and professions, but we have we convened an interagency working group from the professional licensing side, the IT side, and the admin services side to identify the issues that needed to be addressed. We negotiated with the contractor on the system. We developed a plan, and we've been working on this for months with them. We have weekly meetings on this investigation system, and are hoping that all of our corrections will be implemented by June 30th. But we certainly have not in any way ignored this, and we have taken tremendous action and resources to try and fix the issues with that particular investigation system.
Okay. And I guess follow-up.
Representative Wilson.
What I was getting at is if they didn't have teeth in what they needed to do, could we help in some way to get the teeth? You know, that's what I'm, you know, and so, but if we don't need to and it's being worked on, well, then that's all that matters, I guess.
And Representative Wilson, through the chair, this particular process is quite helpful in following up recommendations with the department. And it's a new process, really. This is the second year, so we found that this type of venue is extremely helpful.
And Representative Wilson, we were aware of the problem and had interim hearings on it too, so I again look forward to the division director coming before us, and I think that will be really helpful. Representative Millett.
Thank you. When was the last audit done on the Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing? Do you remember it's been, I mean, have you ever done an audit previous to that, to this audit? Is this the first audit you've done, or wasn't there one done?
Representative Millett, through the chair, this audit in 2011 was specifically on the division on a specific issue. I want to say that we've been there periodically over the years, for sure for our annual sunset, but in addition for other issues that may have come up, I don't know exactly, but I can find out the history on our audit presence in the agency. Get that to you.
Follow up, just this specific agency.
Just this one. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, going back to the sunset audits, it might be a good segue. We have three for 2012, one on the Board of Accountancy, one on the Medical Board, and one on the Board of Marine Pilots. Those start on page 43. Page 43 for Public Accountancy, page 45 for Medical Board, and page 49 for Marine Pilot. We found that all three of these entities served a public purpose and should be extended. We recommended extending the agencies anywhere between 6 and 8 years. We've already discussed the case management system recommendation. That recommendation was made for the Board of Public Accountancy and for the Medical Board. The Medical Board, we also had a recommendation to implement procedures to ensure the board disciplinary actions are reported in accordance with state and federal law. And the Board of Marine Pilots, we had a recommendation, just one, and that was to the Marine Pilot Coordinator to improve administration of the board's operational activities. So that summarizes, in general, the recommendations for the sunset audits. We also performed an audit on the RCA's annual report. And our agency is required to look at RCA's annual report every 2 years. So this starts on page 23 of your recommendation summary. We concluded, when looking at RCA's annual report, that the commission accurately reported on the regulatory docket timelines and statutory timeline extensions. However, data on tariff filings, utility and pipeline dockets, and performance measures was unreliable and or not reported accurately. We recommended the chair, RCA chair, implement and enforce written procedures to ensure that the case management system data is accurate, consistent, and complete. The chair, the commission agreed with the recommendation. We
Kristen,
also,
Kristen, could you, when you go to a new page, could you give the members time to,
sure,
to get to that
sure,
page?
I
feel like I'm sure. in the Iditarod and my dogs are too
it's
fast.
It's a 51-page document, and it really shows how much audit presence we have in this department. So it's quite a bit. I will for sure ask and you to turn to page 25.
Okay. I do have a question about the boards. Are these required in statute and which boards are required by our Constitution? Because I know oftentimes we talk about government that's driven by our Constitution, and so I'm curious which boards are constitutionally required and which ones are simply required in statute. Mm.
Representative Costello, I can't comment which ones are required by Constitution without doing some work on that, and I can get back to you. I do know that statute has a section for these occupational boards, and they're listed out, and they're listed with termination dates. So they were created with termination dates, and once their termination date comes up, our agency must do a review, a sunset audit, and provide that to the legislature before the session starts. So those are available during the hearings for whether to extend them or not. There are, in 2013, we will be performing audits on 5 occupational boards and 4 other commissions. So there's 9 agencies subject to sunset in June 30th, 2014. So it all depends which year, how many are up for sunset. But as far as which ones are required by the Constitution, I'm not sure they would be subject to sunset. But I can find that out.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
When you check to see which ones they are, then if they're not required, for sunset, is there a program that you follow when they should be audited, or do they get audited? What happens to those that just go forever?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, most boards commissions are subject to some type of sunset, and most of them have an audit attached to them. There are some that may come up from sunset and aren't required to have an audit. There's just a few of those, but most of them are subject to some type of review. If they're not subject to a review, then they continue in perpetuity unless someone suggests that they don't continue.
Could we have a list of those, even though they're just a few? Could we know which ones they are?
If you're asking which ones don't have an audit clause, I can find that out.
That would be good to know.
Thank you. It's a good question. And maybe House Bill 30 is a place that we can address that also, the audit bill. Thank you.
On page 25 of your audit, of your summaries, this is a special audit on the medical board that was done in 2011 before we did our sunset. And we did have 2 recommendations that came out of this audit. The first was that that the director of DCBPL implement improvements over complaint processing for the medical board. And we did find when we went in for the 2012 audit that this had been addressed. The second recommendation was that the medical board report their disciplinary actions in accordance with state and federal law. And like I mentioned earlier, this ended up being a recommendation for the sunset as well, because they did show some improvement, but they hadn't fully addressed the finding.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Curtis, so these recommendations, A on page 26, recommendation B on 27, these are from the most recent audit, which was in what time frame?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, this is from the 2011 audit. It's not the most recent audit. We did a sunset review in 2012. They're organized by year, which might be somewhat confusing.
Tis.
Okay.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Okay, moving away from the sunsets, we have on page 30, We have a performance audit issued in 2012 over the Representative
Josephson.
Thank you. Ms. Curtis, I just want to make sure I understand. So this audit was done in 2011, and you were waiting to present it. I mean, I'm sure we could have gotten to it, but it only became pertinent because the sunset is coming up now for the State Medical Board?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, this is a summary of all the audits we've done over the last 3 years. There was a cause for the LBNA committee to request that we do an audit on the medical board in 2011, mm-hmm. which we did. Then the medical board was up for sunset, so we came in and did a sunset audit in 2012. And as just an overview of all last 3 years' audits, we're just going through them. And so the medical board audit was done in 2011.
Okay. If I could, I just want to make sure that I understand the process in that there's no gap where something sits idle, the legislature, because it's busy or unaware, doesn't respond, something bad happens, that sort of thing. It sounds like that.
Yeah, Representative.
I mean, these are human institutions, but that isn't what's going on.
No, Representative Justison. We perform performance audits at the request of Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. So for some reason, a request was asked of the committee for us to do the audit for a specific purpose. Yeah.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I remember, any legislator can ask for an audit of something, and then we go to the Budget and Audit Committee and tell them, and if they feel it's justified, they can ask you then for that, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Page 30 of the summary is our report conclusions and our recommendations associated with the virus-free seed potato project. We were asked to provide an economic overview, essentially, of the project. And what we found was there was no significant monetary or non-monetary returns being received by the state or private entities as a result of certifying seed potatoes for international export. The export market was stagnant, the number of acres used to grow seed potatoes is not large, and it's not increasing. Furthermore, seed potato exports have not provided a positive return in terms of regulatory costs compared to revenue generated by export sales. These factors are not expected to change. Consequently, certifying seed potatoes for international export will act as a subsidy for seed potato farmers.
Kristen, we heard this dismal report yesterday in the Department of Natural Resources Budget mm-hmm. Subcommittee, and so could you explain what the role that Commerce had in this project? Because I want to make sure that we understand that we know exactly where the funding is and that we have the opportunity to no longer fund something that is providing no economic benefit to the state.
Okay, Representative Costello. Department of Commerce acted as a conduit of funding passed through to the university for its export, for its certification, testing, that type of program. So while it received funding from FY95 through last year, it didn't have any expenditures within the department. Those expenditures actually occurred at the university.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
If I remember right, and I might not have this right correct, so correct me if I don't have it right. But basically, this was to keep one person employed, wasn't it?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I can't comment on that. There was a program in place, and it lasted for, I mean, it's been in place since 95, promote a market of virus-free seed potatoes in Alaska.
Thank you, Kristen.
And through the chair.
Oh, Representative Ledoux.
So how many people were in the department in which these seed potatoes were certified?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, the International Export Program is run in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources and University of Alaska through their Plant Materials Center at DNR. Seedlets, I believe they're called, are grown. They're purchased by farmers. It takes several years for these seed potatoes to grow, and then they're sold, exported. So DNR does some certification inspection. University does some testing. So it's a collaboration of multiple departments.
Can I just ask one more question, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
Is a seed potato, is it just like a regular potato? I mean, just does it look like?
Representative Ledoux, I don't know. I have my own little vision of what it looks like, but I can't say that I've actually seen one.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry to try and pin you down, Kirsten, about this. But the language here says that the audit concludes there's no significant monetary or non-monetary returns. Mm-hmm. However, in the second paragraph, the audit does not conclude continued state certification of seed potatoes isn't warranted or unnecessary. And, of course, in the third paragraph, the ag industry views inspection certification as essential mm-hmm. to the success of the industry. Help me reconcile these statements, if I can. Okay. Is there a distinction between certification for export, state certification for export and state certification of seed potatoes?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, absolutely there is. And I didn't spend time distinguishing that because I felt it was a DNR type of distinction. There's two types of certification. Export certification for exporting seeds to Taiwan and China. Then there's a state certification that's been in place since the mid-1960s. The state has been inspecting seed potatoes to ensure that they're disease-free. Our audit does not in any way conclude that these are not necessary services for domestically grown seed potatoes. And the Department of Natural Resources definitely took exception to how we wrote the report, wanted to make sure that those two separate certifications were fully recognized. So I appreciate the question.
So just to follow to clarify, so again, there is state inspection for international export, and there is state inspection for in-state use.
Yes, sir.
Okay, terminology.
And the last paragraph you mentioned, we were specifically asked whether it was a critical element, and we just tried to say that it depends. The industry feels it's a critical to certify, to inspect and certify. So we wanted to highlight that.
With your indulgence, Madam Chair, it is difficult given the amount of information to do a quick run over and try and reconcile. Is this good or is this bad?
Thank you. I'm going to take a short at ease. Back to order. Thank you for the indulgence of the members. I just wanted to check and see if we had everybody's okay to continue past our 5 o'clock intended timeline, and we do, so please continue.
Okay, the final two performance audits that our agency issued were both on the film tax incentive program. We examined the financial aspects of the program as part one, and we looked at the performance aspects of the program as part two.
Representative Millett.
Okay. Just to clarify, this is the film tax credit prior to the changes that we made last session, correct?
Representative Millett, through the chair, we did issue the audit in April or May, and that was examining the structure as it was in place. However, the audit does summarize changes as a result of the new bill.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was on the record, that this is partially the old tax credit prior to the work that we did.
Thank you for that, and also the changes made in Senate Bill 23 last session don't actually go into effect until the summer, and the committee that worked on that legislation did not have access to this audit at the time. But I do appreciate that you've looked at the effect that the changes will have. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's on page 32 is where we start summarizing the two audits. The audit concluded that the Alaska Film Office, or we call it the AFO, and the Department of Revenue's Tax Division generally adhere to film tax credit pre-approval, issuance, and redemption statutes and regulations. Film tax credits are made available to qualified producers, are properly calculated using qualified expenditures, and are approved in compliance with state law. We also conclude that the film incentive program has generated a net positive impact in the state. an economic impact study for the period of July 2008 through February of 2012 indicates direct spending from approved productions has generated $2 in economic output for every $1 in Alaska film production tax credit issued. The study also identified that a significant amount of benefits are realized outside of the state. The audit further concluded that the film office's eligibility and application review is adequately designed to ensure the state's best interests are reasonably protected. However, improvements are needed. Necessary improvements include developing written criteria for evaluating whether production is not in the state's best interests, and strengthening residency verification and documentation requirements to ensure the state has provided the information necessary to adequately review and approve credit calculations. Generally, the film office is meeting its statutory program responsibilities. The AFO is promoting Alaska as a viable film location, cooperating with private entity organizations, and providing production assistance. We made a total of 8 recommendations as part of this audit. 7 of those went to the department, and 1 went to Department of Revenue. We recommended that the Division of Economics Development's Director and the AFO Development Specialist develop clear and measurable criteria to support best interest determinations, and that those determinations should be documented and maintained. Recommended that the AFO Development Specialist ensure that expenditures reported as reviewed by a CPA are within the 24-month qualifying period.
Kristen, mm-hmm. What does it mean, recommendation A? What does that mean?
The clear and measurable criteria to support best interest determination.
Yeah, best interest determination.
Statutes require that production be determined, that it's be determined that it's...
You mean the best interest clause in the Constitution?
Yes.
Okay,
no,
thank you.
No, in the statutes.
Okay.
That the production has to be determined that it's not in the state's best, you can't approve a production if it's not in the state's best interest. There was no criteria for department personnel to really use. They didn't maintain any justification of how they made that determination. And in the productions we reviewed, it can be somewhat questionable.
And so
and
we recommend that was addressed in the new program. Representative Millett.
So did the department ever go back and look at legislative intent prior to the bill we passed last year? I mean, was there any effort to look at what legislative intent was on what in the best interest of the state?
Representative Millett, through the chair, I believe you're asking, could we tell whether the department, when they made the best interest determination, whether they went back to look at the intent? We saw no indication of really what they were doing. They didn't document it. We just had verbal discussion about, you know, they had talked to each other and whatnot, but it wasn't objectively documented, and that's what our concern was, that if someone were to come back and question that, they really had no support.
Representative Wilson.
So I'm thinking in this case, maybe somebody came up and made a film of Alaska, but it was really showing Alaska in a bad light, and we wouldn't want that to happen, and so they would need to develop clear and measurable criteria to support a determination for that.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that's one example. Sexually explicit productions could be another. There's a range of different things that could possibly come up.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Curtis, on page 32, last bullet item, just I'm going to ask you for a definition of what a net positive impact in the state is. It's also say that the film tax approved productions generated $2 in economic output for every $1 in film tax credits. Any way of knowing that? What do you mean by net positive impact in the state?
I'm going to call Lifeline, Mark Lundahl, if you could allow him to come up and help us with that. We do define it in the audit. We've defined it to our economist we hired to do the study. We wanted to make sure it was clear exactly what that calculation meant. I don't know if Mark has that handy.
Welcome, Mark, if you could introduce yourself for the committee.
For the record, my name is Mark Lundahl with Division of Legislative Audit. I do have the audit with me, And as Chris mentioned, Representative Sadler through the chair, we did hire an economist to do this analysis for us. And basically, the net positive impact is the amount of state spending as a ratio of the credits issued. So the economist found that $50 million in qualified state spending occurred and approximately $24 million in credits were issued. So that's where the $2 in economic benefit comes from.
So $24 million in state credits equated to about $50 million in spending in Alaska?
Spending in the state, yes. That includes resident wages, which was about $8 million, and $42 million in approved state spend. So spending for goods and services to Alaska vendors.
Representative Ledoux?
So, but the state didn't, okay, so the state issued credits and therefore it lost $24 million in potential revenue, correct? Am I understanding that correct?
Representative Ledoux through the chair, we did calculate what we called the opportunity cost. The idea is that if $24 million in credits are issued by the state, that is $24 million that is foregone spending in other areas that the legislature could have chosen to spend that money.
Because it would have had additional revenue. And then, but the $50 million, can I follow up on
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely.
Okay, but the $50 million that came back, that didn't come back to the state, that came back to private citizens, correct?
Representative Duke, through the chair, in theory, yes. The spending would have been to state residents as wages and also to Alaska vendors.
So how is that, and maybe I'm missing something, but how is that different than if the state of Alaska had just given money to people for this? I mean, is there any, am I not seeing a difference that's there?
Representative Ledoux through the chair, what the audit concludes is that for every $1, you get $2. For every $1 in tax credit, $2 of economic benefit.
Thank you.
Representative Millett.
So you would equate this to our tourism marketing dollars, same effect. We have a large marketing, tourism marketing. We see the effect through
Representative Millett, through the chair.
It's the same philosophy.
Similar philosophy, okay. Yes.
However, I think the return to the state for the tourism dollars is of one, for every dollar we invest, we receive 15 back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Madam Chair, there was also, I believe, in the revised film tax credit bill that required there was some provision saying that films that the state's tax credit supported could not disparage the state's resource management practices. Is there a sufficient, did your audit find that there's sufficient clear direction or standard for that?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that was not in place when we did the audit, but we did find that they did not have clear and measurable documented criteria for evaluating a production. So that would be a similar problem with this new criteria unless they've developed something, which I...
Good answer. Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Following up on, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Sadler's question. Recommendation A is puzzling, and it seems what the implication is sort of troubling to me. Is there something in statute now that would allow the department to censor a film producer? For example, a reasonable film producer could conclude that our fish and game management practices and the intensive game management law is draconian and horrible. Could they produce such a film? Or could something be prepared that would have the force and effect of law that would say we're not going to issue you credits because it reflects badly on us?
Representative Justice, through the chair, I believe the intent of the bill or the law is that a producer may produce it, but the state won't help them produce it.
Mm-hmm. Representative Josephson, the law does not prohibit anybody from producing anything. The freedom of speech is still intact. They just simply wouldn't receive the subsidy from the state. Representative Ledoux.
So at what point would it be determined under the standards that the legislature set in force last year, I think it was last year, as to whether or not there is any disparaging material? I mean, would it be, is there something in place so that it's reviewed before the tax credit is given?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there is a new, I believe there is a commission. I don't have it in front of me, but there is an entity now that does review the production. And that's what the new bill did, puts them in some safeguards to help ensure that those interests were protected.
Just to follow up on that, so is that reviewing the production after it is already finished? Because what someone might say in an outline might kind of be different than actually how the film turns out.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I know that was a concern discussed during the subcommittee hearings last year. They do have a liaison position, I believe, as part of the new bill.
What is it?
A liaison that...
Kristen, if I may interrupt you, I think what we'll do at this time is ask Robbie Graham to come to the table and perhaps answer some of the broader questions about the changes in the program. And if the committee so desires, we could certainly look further into the film tax incentive program at a future date. But I think since Robbie's here, it might be good to have her respond since she's involved in that program.
For the record, Robbie Graham, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Be happy to answer your questions. I can tell you that based on SB 23, there is the Film Review Commission, which is that goes into effect July 1, and that is comprised of the commissioners of Commerce, Labor, DNR, and Revenue. And the Film Commission has discretion to look at what is in the best interest of the state as it pertains to the synopsis that we receive for consideration. However, it's my understanding that in the new legislation, the portion that covered certain areas, including sexually explicit films, commercial programming, news programming, is not in SB 23 and therefore would fall to some extent to the discretion of the commission, although to the extent that there is criteria and it's still being determined. And so we are looking at that and concerned about it and working to resolve some of these questions.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you go along, if you... Sorry. As you go along, if you think that we need to tweak some of this to make it better, please let us know, because we want to help you to be able to do a good job for the state.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Graham? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Robbie.
My pleasure.
We did have another recommendation to the development specialist to ensure the names of the director and proposed cast are included in the pre-qualification application as required by statute. We recommended the development specialist strengthen qualified expenditure documentation requirements to ensure the tax credit calculations are adequately supported.
Kristen, could you let us know what page you're on?
35.
36.
Okay.
Oh, there's two of them.
So 38 was to the director to ensure that regulations to more clearly define Alaska residency and provide CPAs a more effective method of verifying expenditures claimed as resident wages. We found this was a big problem. Page 39. to the development specialist to strengthen procedures for collecting and reporting Alaska employment data to ensure the information was available for program evaluation. When we examined what had been collected, we saw it was obviously incorrect when we compared the information. So they lacked procedures to collect it, so people were providing the consistent information. And on page 40, to the development specialist to develop film production internship training program certification procedures. That was the main area we saw where the office was not fulfilling their statutory responsibilities. Mm-hmm. They hadn't approved any internship programs. And that.
Yeah. Representative Millett.
Thank you. It's my understanding that the Department of Labor has started working on an internship program for the film industry. Is that correct? And it's close to.
Commissioner Bell.
For the record, Susan Bell, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and through the chair, Representative Millett, the $400,000 grant that was a year ago from the legislature to the Department of Labor specifically instructed Commerce to work closely with Department of Labor, and we did that on the regulations, the evaluations of the proposals, and now, again, casting back to this was a year ago, or almost a full year ago, we do have a number of entities that have received those grants, and it's specifically targeted at increasing our capacity for in-state hire. And if I may also speak to, again, casting back to a year ago, in January 2012, we completed a training of Alaska CPAs and developed some agreed-upon procedures. And I know we're moving quickly through the audit, but on page 35, it does note that the Department of Commerce had done that training, and it was it does address some of the things so that we have consistent terms in the industry that the film industry understands, the auditors, because an audit is required for the program, and amongst DCCED staff. So again, thank you for the opportunity to point out those two things.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. I just want to commend your office, because I know we had a film office before, but it never dealt with tax credits. It never dealt with anything on this level of expenditure. So we passed legislation, and without really considering the effects that it would have on your department and how fast producers and directors would come up to Alaska. I mean, there was a lot of activity once we did this, and I think the expectation was that we were going to have a perfect product after the bill passed. And like many things we do in the legislature, we just didn't have the perfect process. And to try to implement something that was imperfect, you did a fabulous job. And I know that a lot of the audit things have been done in your department, and I want to commend you for it, because a lot of times we pass legislation and we think it's the greatest idea in the world, and boy, it sure has a large effect on your department. So thank you.
With Representative Costello's indulgence, I just wanted to say that I think through the course, you know, we had about 3 years of history with the program, and there were many, many lessons learned as we moved into year two and year three. And again, the audit that we're discussing now, actually the two audits, were completed April of last year. Some of the, so we have nearly a full year of operating the program. And again, you know, even that CPA training, not required in statute, but something that we were moving forward with, and with Representative Costello's leadership, the program on July 1, 2013, the tax credit portion, the pre-approval, moves to Department of Revenue. Our department will continue with the promotion of the program, the coordination with producers and Alaska businesses, and that coordination with Department of Labor and businesses on workforce development.
Yes.
This is a heavily debated political hot potato, and we all know that. But we talk all the time about putting criteria in your department to expand our economic diversity from oil and gas and mining to something. And so people cry for us to diversify our economy. We try a program. It's not perfect. But we can see that through the program that we have generated a large amount of interest in productions in Alaska, whether we get it right with Alaska Hire or with the balancing of the credits. I think Representative Costello did a fabulous job of working through a really hot potato issue last session for us, and so I just commend you and Representative Costello, because, you know, if Alaskans want the economy to be diversified, these are the programs that we're going to have to try. And so as the budgets get tighter and we understand our budget constraints better, you know, it's better to have these things in place now than when we're cutting the budget and, you know, we have some trained folks out there.
Representative Ledoux.
I just wanted to say that through the film credit, there was actually a movie made right in my district. The movie, I think, was called The Frozen Ground, and they used a local bakery. Mm-hmm. And also used somebody's house on Old Harbor Street.
Actually, Commissioner, I had a question, too, about the It's always hard when a commissioner is in the room because, you know, you obviously have a lot of information about your department. But my question is about the internship program. And during testimony on that bill, we heard from the university that they were very interested in beefing up a program that would then feed into the film industry. And so my question is, are you working with the university on that internship program so that some of the students who are graduating or perhaps still in school can participate in that opportunity?
And Representative Costello, I do recall that testimony. We had instructors as well as students talk passionately about their interest in the program and what they were learning and their ability to work on some of the productions. And what I would like to do, just so that we have the detail, is to follow up so that the committee has the benefit of seeing what programs were funded through that initial $400,000 grant, and we can augment some information about the university's programs as well.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee members? Kristen, have you gone through your entire audit review for us?
I have.
Thank you. So with that, I wanted to mention that our next meeting is Tuesday, February 5th in this room, and this will be our permanent home from here on out. Thank you very much for all the testimony. Meeting adjourned.